The gospel is from Luke chapter 24, verses 13 through 35. Now on that day, two of them were going to the village called Emmaus, about 7 miles from Jerusalem, and talking with each other about all these things that had happened. While they were talking and discussing, Jesus himself came near and went with them, but their eyes were kept from recognizing him. And he said to them, "What are you discussing with each other while you walk along?" They stood still, looking sad. Then one of them, whose name was Cleophas, said, answered him, "Are you the only stranger in Jerusalem who does not know the things that have taken place there these days?" He asked them, "What things?" They replied, "The things about Jesus of Nazareth, who was a prophet mighty in deed and word before God and all the people, and how our chief priests and leaders handed him over to be condemned to death and crucified him. But we had hoped that he was the one to redeem Israel. Yes, and besides all this, it is now the third day since these things took place. Moreover, some of our women of our group astounded us. They were at the tomb early this morning, and when they did not find his body there, they came back and told us that they had indeed seen a vision of angels who said that he was alive. Some of those who were there went with us to the tomb and found it just as the women had said, but they did not see him. Then he said to them, 'Oh, how foolish you are, and how slow of heart to believe all that the prophets have declared. Was it not necessary that the Messiah should suffer these things and then enter into his glory?' Then, beginning with Moses and all the prophets, he interpreted to them the things about himself in all the scriptures. As they came near to the village to where they were going, he walked ahead as if he were going on. But they urged him strongly, saying, 'Stay with us, because it is almost evening and the day is now nearly over.' So he went in to stay with them. And when he was at the table with them, he took bread, blessed it and broke it, and gave it to them. Then their eyes were opened, and they recognized him, and he vanished from their sight. They said to each other, 'Were our hearts not burning within us when he was talking to us on the road while he was opening the scriptures to us?' That same hour they got up and returned to Jerusalem, and they found the 11 and their companions gathered together. They were saying, 'The Lord has risen indeed, and he appeared to Simon.' Then they told what had happened on the road and how he had been made known to them in the breaking of the bread." The word of the Lord.
My young nieces introduced me to a lot of new things, and that's always fun. One of the new things, gaming type things that they've introduced me to are called escape rooms. Have anyone heard of those? Anyone been on one of those? Yeah. For those of you that don't know, they're in Bismarck here, they're in a lot of cities. They set up rooms with a theme in there. And you get a group of people, and you go in that room, and they lock you in that room, and you have an hour to solve all sorts of puzzles in there and get all sorts of clues together until you finally solve the puzzle and you can escape the room or not. Like the one we went on, it was a pirate-themed room, and you're supposed to open these chests and these drawers and stuff and find keys and find numbers for the combinations on there until you could finally find it. And that's a lot of fun. And these things, you start out real well. You find the obvious clues, and you get them together, and you open up solve a few puzzles and open up a few boxes, and you think, we're making good progress until all of a sudden you hit a dead end, a brick wall there. You've got all these clues, but nothing is working, and no matter how many times you try the numbers on those combination locks, they just won't open. So the good thing about this is they give you clues. Most of them give you about 4 clues in the hour there, so you kind of have to pace yourself. And the way they know how to give you the right clue is that they have a camera in the room there watching you do this, and there's somebody else in another room watching you playing the game on a computer screen. So they know exactly how far you are and what the next clue for you is. And so you buzz it, and they give you the next clue, and all of a sudden, you open another box, and you get another clue, and you're on your way. When they give you that clue, it changes everything for you. One time after playing one of those games, I talked to the person who had been watching us, you know, on the TV screen, and I said, you must get a lot of laughs out of the fact of how stupid people are in not solving these puzzles. And the person said, no, that's not the way it goes. It's really frustrating to watch the people because, from our point of view, they are so close to solving the puzzle. They are just one little step away. It's right there under their nose, but they just can't see it. How interesting, huh? With that perspective, I want to look at this story from the gospel today. It's a familiar story. It's one of my favorite stories. It took place on Easter Sunday afternoon, that very first Easter Sunday. And it met two of Jesus' disciples. Disciples who had come to Jerusalem, and they had the privilege of meeting Jesus and listening to him and coming to believe in him and to trust in him, and to hope in him, and to love him. They were willing to base their lives, their future, on this relationship with this wonderful, wonderful Savior who'd come into the world. But then they were shocked to find out that the religious authorities were plotting against this guy. They didn't like Jesus. In fact, they actually captured him, they tried him, and they put him to death and put him in a grave. And their hearts were broken. All their hopes and their dreams for the future had just vanished. And in confusion, they left Jerusalem and went back to their lives with no hope. And on the way back, we could see them puzzling, trying to figure out what had gone wrong, what had really happened here. And in the midst of that puzzling, who shows up? Jesus. Jesus comes and is walking with them right in the middle of their confusion and their questioning. And they don't recognize him. You know, we think, well, how could that be? It happens all the time. A couple weeks ago, I did a wedding, and I had only met the bride once before for some premarital work. And at that time, she was blonde. So the day of the wedding, I'm walking around where everyone was having lunch, and I walk in that room there, and here's a very lovely brunette woman with a lot of makeup on, and she smiles at me and says hi, and I thought, I wonder who that is. That must be one of the bridesmaids, and I go and grab a sandwich, and then I do a double take and realize that was the bride. So, if you're not looking for something right, you can overlook it. Well, they didn't know it was Jesus, but he came, and he talked to them, and he was teaching them. He was trying to reveal to them what was really going on, and they were starting to get a clue because it says, as they look back at it, that their hearts were burning. There was something that was just tingling in them. There was something that they just wanted to do and to know more, and so they kept with him. They didn't understand everything, but they kept with him. They invited him to stay and eat with them until finally, in something as simple as giving the grace for the meal and breaking the bread and sharing with it, all of a sudden everything burst open, right? All of a sudden they were no longer without a clue. It was Jesus right there with them, and that changed everything for them, didn't it? Instead of going sulking back to this little town of Emmaus, they went right back to Jerusalem, the heart of it all, and they could not wait to tell the disciples, we have seen the risen Lord. You know, a couple months I'm going to be retiring, and everyone asks, so, what are you going to do? And I kind of snottily go, nothing. Isn't that what retirement is about? If I wanted to have things planned out for me, I would stay working, right? And they go, okay, we get that, but what are you really going to do? Well, it's not like I got nothing. Maybe I'll get on my motorcycle and ride off into the West. I don't know. I could always do pastoral stuff. There isn't a retired pastor in Bismarck who could not be preaching somewhere on any given Sunday, and I plan to do some of that, not every Sunday by any means. But one of the things that I'm really looking forward to doing, and this is, I started this a couple years ago, was trained to be a spiritual director. I've talked about that, I know. And I spent 2 years with it, and now I'm started with it, and I'm really looking forward to being able to do this in my retirement. The process is really simple. As a spiritual director, you meet one-on-one with somebody who wants to know, discern more where God is taking them in their life. They may have some problem in their life. They may just simply lack direction. They may just be grateful to God and want to know, how do I go deeper in that walk? And it's a real simple process. You just meet one-on-one, and I go with them on the journey of their life. They tell me where they're going, what their roadblocks are, what their lack of direction is, what their lack of problem, what their problems are in their life. And the advantage, and it's huge, but it seems like so little, that I can bring to it as a director is that I realize it's not just me and that person talking, but that there's a third one coming with us on that journey, and it is Jesus. And just having that assurance that Jesus is in the midst of that situation just holds it open until finally some little thing in their life will just break it open, and they see that, and they know, and that changes absolutely everything for them. You know, though, you don't have to be a trained spiritual director to do this. Every one of us in our lives can look at our lives and have that trust in our heart that seen or unseen, Jesus is accompanying us and he is right there with us. And that would change absolutely everything. In your marriages, you're married to this wonderful, frustrating, fascinating person. And sometimes when things are getting a little rocky, you think, oh, it's just in us in this together, and where are we going, and I don't know what's going on. At that time, open your eyes, the eyes of your heart, as that song says, to see where Jesus is involved in that. In your relationship with your children, you love your children beyond belief, but they also can be frustrating and maddening, and you wonder, am I doing what I need to do as a parent? Again, remember what happened here at baptism. God promised that you're not in this parenting business alone, that Jesus himself is committed to the life of your child, and seen or unseen, Jesus is walking there. And that changes everything. You can do this with anything that you're involved with, in your friendships, in your work, in whatever's going on. Look for the presence of Jesus and see how that impacts things. I want to close with a little parable. It's about a monastery, and they were famous. They were famous for their holiness, and pilgrims would come from miles around because of the spirit of that place. There was love. And there was holiness, and there was peace. And visitors just like to come in and bask in that. But after a while, the monks were getting a little crabby. They would be picking on each other. They would be fighting with each other. They would be not trusting each other. They'd be saying, so-and-so's doing less work than I am. Make them. And pretty soon they noticed there were fewer and fewer pilgrims coming there. Why? Because the whole spirit of the place had changed. Now there was anger, mistrust. Everything was uncomfortable. Well, the leader of the monastery, he's called an abbot, was, of course, distressed. This isn't what he wanted for his community right there. And he didn't quite know who to consult because he couldn't talk to anyone right there in the monastery. So he went to his old friend in the community, the local Jewish rabbi. And he poured out his heart how things were going so wrong in his monastery. And the wise old rabbi said this to me. He says, you know, in my prayers recently, God has given me a vision about your monastery. Well, the abbot perked up at that. He says, yes, God has promised me that the coming Messiah is one of the members of your monastery. Well, the abbot went back. He was just astonished. He called all the monks together, and he told them this news, and it was met with dead silence because everyone in the monastery was looking around at each other wondering, is that the Messiah? Is that the Messiah? Could that be the Messiah? And all of a sudden, the whole mood of the monastery changed once again. They began to trust one another, because why wouldn't you trust someone who might be the future Messiah? They began to treat each other with respect and care, because why wouldn't you respect someone who might be the future Messiah? And they began to love one another, because why would you not love the Messiah? And the mood changed, and people came back, the pilgrims came back to bask in the holiness and the peace and the love of that community, all because they dared to believe that right in their midst, there was the Messiah, and that changed everything.